that will make some room. When it comes to have people living out of space on an international space center before, we cannot figure out how to get folks coming back to these places. So, the space, you know, the fact is, we put focus and money where we want to, first of all, put it where it should matter. You know, the people's voice through their votes should be of the highest priority of any political figure in this country. If you say otherwise, then to me, that means you don't truly want to see everyone's voice heard. You only want a certain amount of voices to be heard. I mean, we just dealt with this, and not even that many years ago. I mean, this has been a consistent problem. Look at what Bush ran against Gore down in Florida. We had the infamous recount going on down in Miami and Broward County, and those of you in the city. And the Supreme Court had to be involved in things that is stupid. We really learned from all the past and correct these things so that we don't have these voting issues. Every time we have a close election, we shouldn't have to deal with this. Our court shouldn't have to decide. The people should decide who is elected. And that's even here in Georgia. Now, we have our own issues here in Georgia with the post elections campaign for government and Brian Kemp. I'm glad to see that Brian Kemp finally resigned this week. But, you know, some people are saying that they're letting the dollar short. I mean, the brother of his own campaign, why is he a terrorist? I mean, who gets to do that? You know, okay, let me be my point of attorney while I'm also serving as a judge in court. And that's kind of what it turns out that, you know, it's definitely I should as an attorney. You don't get to do both. You don't get to be the judge and the person brings a complaint. That's just not fair. That leaves too much room for perceived bias. And again, like I said last week, I am just flabbergasted that our leaders around this today, my good friend, Mr. Dominic Perkins. How are you doing today, Dominic? I am absolutely wonderful. Thank you so much for joining us. More exciting conversation with Teddy Reese. And we also have with us Adrian Chester, Pastor Adrian Chester. How are you doing, sir?
All is well. Yes, it is. And if it's not, it is going to be. So we are so glad that you're here. And thank you so much for being here as well. So let's talk a little bit about some election results. And we're going to start at the state level and wrap up with what happened here locally. So, Dominic, looking at the state level, we know that the election is technically still not decided, right?
It's still not decided. It's a close race. It's a really close race in the governor's mansion. For the governor's mansion, the difference is about 63,000 total votes, and it would only take about 20,000 or 25,000 votes to push it to an actual runoff. So, with some of the issues we've seen, for instance, in places like Albany, and I've heard of cases in Savannah, basically throughout the state, where people have had issues with requesting absentee ballots, not receiving them on time, even prior to the hurricane that took place. That is, people who have requested absentee ballots before then and didn't receive them until the Sunday or Monday before election day, which, as we know, means they weren't able to get them in at the time. And so all of those things have to be addressed. Plus, I've heard multiple stories of people being given provisional ballots and not even being told that their ballot was provisional. For cases as simple as them using a passport instead of a driver's license, and the person who was handling their voting at the time just wasn't clear on what the laws were at the time. So, both for this election, and I think for the greater good of the state of Georgia, I think we need to go through this process, see it through, find out about all the regularities that took place, find out from as many people as possible about the problems they ran into, where mistakes were made, and how we can do better as a state so that we don't have these types of issues. Because as you said, there's too much technology out there. There's too much out there for these types of things to be taking place. And when a person attempts to vote, their vote should be counted. And so I think it's really important that we kind of see this process all the way through, through the normal channels with the Secretary of State's office. And of course, we're probably in for some legal battles. I know there's been some lawsuits regarding Albany, and I think maybe one or two other cities. So just seeing the process through all the way and making sure that everybody votes get counted.
What is so hard for me to accept when this looks so emotionally disturbing is if we take into consideration the factors that we have in the market between the fault, you know, the civil rights movement, and black people could vote back in the day. You have to tell the black people how many levels were in the bar smoke, or you have to try to attack the entire Constitution, you know, without reading the media. Like, I don't know anything about that. And so now we have the Secretary of State who, prior to the election, purged hundreds of thousands of people from the voting rolls when you told them, oh, yeah, you can still vote, you can all vote with your original ballot. But what people were not told is that if you vote with your original ballot, you got to go back up to the election office within 3 days to verify who you are. Why all the verification can't be done when the people cast the original ballot? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. It doesn't make sense to me for me to be there, show them my ID, then to tell me you're not on the roll, you're the provisional ballot, and then 3 days I gotta come through to this fucking idea again for that vote count. I mean, the idea is not gonna change.
Yeah, yeah. Sure. Just generally, how we do, how we handle our elections and the voter rolls in Georgia, I think needs a serious look. And I think it's time for some, you know, for some real discussion and real legislation that changes how we handle elections in Georgia. First of which, and I'm going to go ahead and make the recommendation now if it hasn't been done already, there needs to be some sort of limit on Secretary of State's overseeing races that they're involved, that they're running in, other than for Secretary of State. Of course, we can't make the Secretary of State seeking re-election step down. But if they attempt to run for lieutenant governor or governor or Congress or something like that, I think there could be some sort of requirement that requires them to step down or to allow somebody else to whatever. Our legislators will have to come up with something, but something needs to be done so that we don't get into a situation where a man who's running for a seat gets to make decisions about how the election he's running even gets operates.
Well,
if you allow me to make a quick point about what Donald said as it relates to oversight and just ethics, as I use myself as an example, that a great deal with that church, I am the CEO, but I still don't like the check. So by Brian Kemp being the person, being the Secretary of State, and being in office, overseeing his own election, he raises moral and ethical issues that not only our legislators must look at, but also those who have a moral and ethical conscience. I don't believe that we should just let that go under the rug. It's now time for those who are prophetic in nature and prophetic in ministry to speak up and let our voices be heard in a cohesive way and also in a collaborative way of how we disdain and how we disapprove of how this election was handled and all the irregularities that have just come up for one who blatantly practicing voter suppression in a most disrespectful way, really saying, hey, I dare somebody to say something to me about what I'm going to do, knowing that it's not.
And you know, with this situation here, I'm tired of what they have to do today as November 11th. We are 11 days away from Thanksgiving. And we know that we're going to that break of Thanksgiving. We know the president is turned down and bowed down, and people are no longer fighting. And so for four months, we can take a nap today. But we can't do that. know, where is it going to take for people, good moral standing people, to stand up and say, we are not going to be bullied, we are not going to have our rights taken, we are not going to ignore the constitutional right and voice of those that exercise property, those that are appropriate citizens of the state of Georgia, who have that constitutional and legal right to vote. We're going to stand up and fight this because everything is not a court battle. Some things is a legal court battle. Some things is a court of public opinion battle. And right now, I think we're losing the court of public opinion battle about this issue because those that hold you to put up on the front lines with everything else. I'm just not sure you can do anything about that. I mean, I don't know. Well, I would have thought when I was thinking about it, I would say those who are agitated, those who see what's going on and know what's going on, first need to check the hearts and minds of those who represent us at the state level and see where they fall on this particular issue and what game plans are being talked about or what is going to be done as far as legislation to come out in this upcoming legislative session in 2019 to ensure that this doesn't happen. I mean, you can prevent anything, but you need those persons who are some of this elected by the people to present that in our state legislature this upcoming year. I remember very vividly when Teddy ran a few years ago, there were some people who felt that Teddy did something and they wanted to present a particular resolution here in the city of Columbus, which we all call now the Teddy Ordinance.
So I think the focus right now is on whether there was people who were illegally or incorrectly, stopped from voting and making sure that their votes count. And so I think that's what the focus is on. So in a race of this size, I do think there is a possibility that you may not find, 63,001, I'm rounding, total votes out there with this election. But it may be the difference between forcing a recount or actually taking us into a runoff, because I think the last I checked, it would require about 23,000 or so votes for there to be a recount and about 24,000 votes going to someone other than Brian Kemp would force a runoff. And so I think it's about making sure that people were treated fairly, that people were given the opportunity to vote. I know there was a huge discussion about the exact match policy that Brian Kemp had, and that may or may not have, many people think twice about going to attempt to vote because of the issues they have with their name or, between their ID and their voter file and things like that. So I think it's, you know, again, about kind of going through the process, seeing how many votes were out there, seeing if there's a substantial number of people who were, you know, who were blocked from voting, and just seeing how it impacts the numbers in the race.
Unfortunately, as the numbers change right now, what we have to do is to move the needle. But the greatest challenge is to get all of the statistics out of the people voting. We took the time out of the vote. People still voted in my mind. Some people still in the rain. You know, some people were out there in the heat after the rain moved by and the clouds were coming and the sun started beating down on them. You know, some people still in the mind of the vote. But they had three voting machines for policing that started coming to the office. You know, those type of actions are totally unnecessary. When you have 700 machines just sitting in a warehouse not being used on our election in Detroit, you know, where I live, I don't think we have surplus machines anywhere. So, those machines that we could be used, and in fact, for those people who are aware of that, they took serious, they took serious responsibility to be involved, to be engaged in the process. Flies in the face, it was spit in the face of our efforts to make sure that people's rights are protected and that folks do engage in the political process. It's already hard enough to get these political
things. Yeah. You know, I say this to my students when I teach classes and things like that. In my mind, the most important thing government does is conduct elections. Above anything, above building roads and bridges, running police forces, running a jail, doing anything else, the most important thing our government does is conduct free and fair elections. And not just in Georgia, but in Florida and throughout the country, in Arizona right now, I think I saw something this morning that they said that 15% of votes are outstanding. I mean, what on earth are you doing if you still have 15% of votes outstanding in the race? And we've got to figure out ways to do better and to make elections more accessible to people who are attempting to vote. With the voter purging, you know, this purging of voters from the rolls because they haven't voted in a certain amount of time, that's nonsense to me. It makes no sense. Once you register, short of dying or moving, or there being some sort of severe irregularity with your voting file, there's no reason why somebody should be purged. And that's no sense. That's nonsense.
That is absolutely nonsense. Because all this talk about, you know, people being double voting and voter fraud, putting all the folks to voting into, you know, there was some research done by some folks who found out a Republican state senator was supposed to be able to register to vote in Georgia and not
bring it. There's so much misinformation about what happens with elections and, you know, voter fraud and so many other different things. And this discussion about maintenance of voter rolls is that's nonsensical to me. It doesn't make sense. Once the person registers, we don't go around looking to see if the person is still driving or not. And when a person gets a driver's license, they say, you know, get the driver's license and decide, I'm not going to drive for you. We don't have regulations to say, you must drive every 6 months in order to keep your driver's license.
It shows you that this is the type of targeting to arrest folks who vote.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And in order not to get my people to get out of it, the database is electronic and low. It's not like my people are going to take a file of votes.
Even with voter registration, those states out there have data for voter registration. When you can register to vote, you can walk in, register to vote, and vote that day. That should be, in my opinion, that should be a universal standard. There's these voter registration deadlines of appearing this and appearing that. Yeah, it makes no sense. It makes no sense to me. There's too much technology out there.
Wait,
that have to do these types of things and you know, the different excuses that are used for it, it doesn't make any sense.
You know, in Washington State, everybody vote by mail. You know, the ballot out to you.
Yeah.
And you fill it out and send it back to you.
Yeah, and I think the same in Colorado.
Yeah.
And those places, in these places where everybody votes by mail, they have insanely high voter participation with the
densities. So that's what people, but that's what they don't want.
Yeah.
It's going, and I'm going to say that is what the conservatives do not want to enjoy. They do not want people to vote. They do not want to put voting. They count on folks, particularly minorities, stay at home on voting day, but not voting, so that they can make these elections. And that's just the way they do it. You know, and it's a sad thing because if you really care about the Constitution in this country and you're so patriotic, you should want everybody's voices to be heard that are not taking voting decisions. As an activist, what should be the concern? You know, we don't want to vote by mail because we don't know who's going to vote. There may be voter fraud. Well, we have voter fraud right now because people vote is not being counted.
Yeah.
We have voter fraud right now because they're denying people voices and they need to do a vote.
Yeah. And let's talk about being able to vote a straight ticket ballot. Being able to go, you know, how we, when we go and vote, there's 8 or 9 or 10 pages worth of the ballot that you have to go through to get to the end of the ballot. And one of the things I see in the work I do, you know, as a data person on campaigns, is you see something we refer to as down ballot drop off, where people vote for the first person on the ticket, and then there's a drop off. There's a drop off from governor to lieutenant governor, and from lieutenant governor to an agriculture commissioner to your state house person to some sort of local referendum that's on the ballot. And so we see these drop offs. Well, what you should be able to do is you should be able to go in there and stick your ballot in the machine. You should be able to press Democrat and then fill in all the Democrats on the ballot, or press Republican and then fill in all the Republicans on the ballot. The next page should be the constitutional amendments that we give, that we see repetitively in the elections, which is a separate discussion. And then in your local referendums, and that's all you can see. Now, if you choose to vote for individual people, or you don't want to vote a straight ticket, you should also have that option. It should be about providing options and making the process as easy as possible. And when you get done, you can receive a receipt for the ballot that you cast. It is insane to me that when I go vote, I have no evidence that I actually went and cast a ballot other than my word. But I can go to Burger King and buy a dollar burger from Burger King and I get a receipt every time I go. It doesn't make sense.
At minimum, we vote twice. At minimum, we vote twice every 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
That's for the local elections in the
United
States. And there may be a one in which we could be a federal election or a general election, but it's for the 3 or 4 years. We don't do it enough to say that it's too expensive for us to provide these voting
machines,
to provide a sample of the voting program.
Yeah, and in my mind, like I said, well, the most important thing government does is to have free and fair elections. So when we talk about elections, costs should never be a part of this discussion.
Costs should never be a part. Especially when we have to get the tax breaks. Yeah, I'm going to try to I think we need a party that calls themselves a fiscally responsible. Which is going to propose a bill that will give tax cuts to government.
Whoa, oh, mercy, mercy me. Oh, things ain't what they used to be now. Where did all the blue skies go? Poison is the wind that blows from the north and south and east. Whoa, mercy, mercy me.
Mercy.
All things and what they used to be lost. Oil wasted on the oceans and upon our seas. Fish full of mercury. Oh, mercy, mercy, mercy. All things ain't what they used to be. Lost matter, radiation underground and in the sky. Animals and birds who live near Baba's night. Mercy, mercy me. All things and what they used to be. What about this overcrowded land? How much more we use from man? Can't you stand?
I'm good, but I have a story and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in a crowd.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I still have nightmares.
I'm really not so good, but are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
I really believe it speaks to where the hearts of many Americans are. There are some people who are still gung-ho to remain with the party loyalties, but there are some who are wanting change in America, especially with the rise of senseless gun violence against black and brown bodies here in America, and even with what we're seeing to other cultures just a few weeks ago in Pittsburgh. And so it's time for America to have a real conversation from a legislative, from that federal legislative conversation about what we're going to do about gun control and not being bought off by the NRA as we look at the disclosures from many of our Democratic and Republican representatives and senators. And so I believe Mrs. McBeth was able to push her message. And that's what brought about the change in the system, which really inspires anyone who decides to put their name on the ballot. That if you stand for what is right, and if it's the right timing and God's will, you can do the impossible. Others may think it's impossible.
It is so magical, Pastor, because when I went to Dallas, she was moving about 57 votes. 57 votes out of hundreds of thousands. 57 votes separated them. And I woke up the next morning and had counted some absentee ballots and shouldn't help my 6,000. I said, oh, look at that. The Lord is moving. And I think there was a message in that because, you know, guess when you thought she was going to lose it, brought more attention to that race than she just took to lose. He may not be there when you want him, but he'll be there right on time. Yes, sir, he's always on time. So, Dominic, from a political perspective, I know that's going to add an additional Democratic team. It's going to take us from 4 to 5. So, we're going to have Congressman Bishop, who is the only Democratic congressman outside of Metro Atlanta. We're going to have Tony Thompson. We're going to have John Lewis, David Scott, and now Lucy McBeth. So that gives Georgia 5 Democrats out of the 14 congressional votes that we speak to this week. How is that going to impact us politically?
Well, I think it has a huge impact. Anytime you add another Democratic leader from the state of Georgia in Washington and in the state, it really changes the calculus about what the citizens of Georgia, what they really represent and what they want for the entire state of Georgia. Because even though members of Congress represent a specific district and not the entire state, they are very representative of the people within the state. And another thing to consider is if you look at the areas they represent, where the 6th district is at, where Congressman Lewis district is at, Hank Johnson, David Scott, and Congressman Bishop. Those are centered around a lot of very big population centers in the state. And so though it's not necessarily indicative of all of the people in each of the major population centers, it gives you an idea of where the state is trending and a lot of other things. And I think what it also gives is it gives Democrats more representation in a bunch of different areas. You have Congressman Bishop, his district, there's lots of, he's focused a lot on agriculture, a lot on the military because we have Fort Benning and we have the Marine Corps base down in Albany. And then you've got John Lewis, who's got huge businesses, lots of corporations within his district, and then Lucy up there in the 6th. So it just has a huge impact and really changes the discussion about politics in Georgia for all of us. So it's a big thing. And I just want to also hit on her campaign generally. I think the other message it sends to people who are thinking to run for office in Georgia, I think the message it sends is, if you stick to running a principled campaign, so running on issues and not running on a person, not running on the person you're opposing, and sticking to issues and explaining to the voters why those issues matter, why they're relevant, why they're important, and why they impact their lives, that people will really pay attention to you. And it's about building relationships, and I think Lucy did a lot of that in her run for the 6th district. From the area, and so I think people really latched on and decided that they were going to go with her because of what she brought to the table. So I think it's a huge and positive impact in a lot of ways.
Right, and that is so true. I appreciate both of your perspectives. Now, while we have a couple minutes left, let's talk a little bit about the local election here. We did have two local elections here on the ground. One is that with this week's seat of Senator Josh McCone, and you had Valerie Haskins, who was the Democrat opposing Brandon Robinson, who was the Republican. And, as many people probably suspected, based on the gerrymandering of that district, it was a very easy election for Robinson.
Yeah, I will say that Randy got about 18,000 votes, and Valerie got a little over 11,000 votes. So that was the 61-39 race. But to be honest with you, I looked at the numbers for that district in the tags, and I got it at about 65-35. So I'd actually say that Valerie kind of overperformed in her race for that district. I didn't know Valerie personally, but I met her a few times and met some people who were involved in her campaign, and I know she went out there and worked really hard. But yeah, as you said, it's a very gerrymandered district, and he's having concerns with it. So I was always up to the battle for her. But it was, though it wasn't on paper, it wasn't close. It was closer than I think a lot of people would have expected. So that was an interesting race to watch.
Yeah, now that he's been racing, I think it was close. I think it was close.
know, it's very rare that a race on that level gets so much attention built locally. If you not afford to load that support, then more folks get in that election. And she was victorious. And she ran a great race with Josh Glover. And I want to just publicly stand here right now that my hat is off to both of those women. Because those two got to be given a very clean, respectful, and just downright humble campaign. They didn't get involved with the nastiness. There was some agitators around the process that tried to create issues. You know, there have been certain folks that are here in our community. They're always sticking their nose in something, trying to cause division. And I wish we could start calling those people out and still trying to get them. So, you know, I'm saying, you know, I'm ready to do a couple of things that's next to me. When folks that don't care anything about our community or about the condition of certain parts of our community stick their noses in races where they have no business, like their opinions even matter. But, you know, I'm really passionate about that. You know, I'm just wearing a damn telephone. But at any rate, those two women, they showed the highest level of class and boys. And I was fortunate to be at the NAACP induction ceremony for the new officers of the NAACP. And I saw the two start and embrace themselves, embrace each other. And that made me feel good inside. That happened because too often the model of political opposition that we see here locally and we see on a national level is that your political opponent is very new. And you have to hate them, and you can just speak to them. And you got to fall out with folks that are helping you with their campaign. You know, it's just so ridiculous. It's the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen in work. Businesses belong to the public. Just because you've been in it for 20, 30, 40 years don't mean that you own it. It still belongs to the public. And we got to get back to understanding the concept that the people of the district, those people belong to them. There may come a point in which they feel that there needs to be new leadership and new representation. But talk a little bit about that.
Yes, so Danielle, according to the last numbers I looked at, she had about 31,773 votes, or about 56% of the vote. And Shasta got right at 24,276, or 43% of the vote. So that's about a 7,000 or so vote difference. So pretty, you know, pretty good margin there. But still, as you said, a well-done race. Both of them worked really hard. Danielle worked really hard. Shasta worked really hard. Was very active and things like that. So that's kind of how it played out. So we've had a lot of turnover, unfortunately, with the loss of Dr. Ann Hardin. Special election, so we might see a bit of turnover in that seat, but we'll move on to Danielle Forte being the new clerk, and you know, hopefully she does well and is successful in her running of the office.
To work with her on making sure that our children that were routed through the juvenile justice system get the help and sometimes the discretion that's necessary to not ruin their lives forever. Danielle was there to help those parents and those children, and she fought well, she fought hard with promises to folks on behalf of the community. And I just thought that was always so awesome. And so I'm glad to see her in that position. She has over 2 decades of litigation experience working with superior court clerk offices throughout the state, as well as throughout the Southeast on federal and state level. She knows strength to superior court. And I will tell you, as an attorney, the superior court is so important to us when it comes to filing, when it comes to finding records, when it comes to moving, who's on the news, who's not, when it comes to witness reports, it's important to the legal community. When it comes to issues, things of that nature. So, we're glad to have strong leadership in the office. and I'm glad to have support of her. So I just wanted to interrupt this stuff. I just got to tell you guys, you know, just keep your eyes on what's going on. There are court hearings still going on down in Florida, here in Georgia. And, you know, this is 2018 for us to be fighting continuing battles. Folks not wanting people's voices to be heard, and people not wanting individual rights to be executed as they properly should. And I'm going to give you two last words to close out this show. So,
I think one more local thing I did want to mention. There was a local referendum regarding the timing of Sunday alcohol sales, because we still have these archaic, outdated, old way of thinking about how we handle Sunday alcohol. So I think it changed the time from 12:30 to 11 o'clock, if I understand it correctly. So now it's lunch meal or whatever you want to call it. So now, if your heart so desires, you can go have a mimosa at 11 a.m. versus having to wait until 12:30. So hopefully one of these days we will come out of the old days and we'll have to allow people to buy alcohol when they feel like it. But that was what happened. About 40,302 people voted in favor of making the time a little earlier, and 20,752 people in the city of Columbus opposed it. So if you are one of the people who opposed it, I would love to hear why, because I didn't. So I was curious to ask you about that.
I would just say that you supported the Sunday alcohol sales and plan on participating. I hope it occurs after you go to A&M Rocket with your local church.
Yeah, well, that's right.
I know how you feel.
Well,
I did ask
him about it. Well, it would have to be with that. You guys will bring it all up and put it on the table right now. You got to look, in my opinion, you got to look, first of all, I don't like to try to make no morale about, people's life and morality. I can't tell you what to do with your life. I'm not going to tell you not to drink. I'm not going to tell you not to play the lottery. I can't do that, and it's not my job to tell you that. You are in charge of your own destiny. You do what you want to do, as long as you're within the bounds of the law. And, as an attorney, I do believe you can step away from the court and say, even when you're comfortable, try to speak into our legal background and have somewhat of a challenge for that, because they run afoul of the Constitution. Now, with that said, I also have to acknowledge that this bill will do a lot for us economically. Those servants that oftentimes are people working part-time jobs that can't get other jobs, we were just setting up for our earlier, the three of us were, and we had a story that was a student moment. And she was 22 years old, and she talked about, how hard it is, how difficult it is. Well, if her job can now open up at 11:30 to start lunch early, and whether it's alcohol, most of us are more people in there, it's just economic booster, and that's all, folks. So sometimes we have to look at, what's the full benefit of it, and how it's going to work. 7:30, 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock is not that much of a time. So it was very minor. So that's how the process is going to happen. Particularly for our West Park community, that would love to see that boost coming so early. So, this is our recap today on the election. And I just want to close out by saying, I don't have to remind you of the people that God delivered and fought for us that have the right to vote. And those of you who exercise the right to vote, I want to thank you for doing that. But there is one number that I want to leave you with this day, and that number is right here. Out of Columbus, Georgia, as we're looking at the final numbers for tonight. Columbus, Georgia has 112,540 registered voters. Again, that's 112,540 registered voters. 63,196 people actually voted. That's roughly 56%. Now, that's higher than what they normally is, but that also means that 44% of the people here in Columbus, Georgia, 44% of the people here in Columbus, Georgia, over 50,000 people that were registered to vote did not cast a vote. This is the only one of them right in Columbus, Georgia. Just think about that. What that means, especially as we begin this transition toward 2020, where the president will be on the ballot again, where other critical decisions will be made about our local elections, about new leadership, about a possible new direction for this area. We need to be thinking about that. That this group over 40,000 folks, 50,000 folks, we need to vote. We need to get involved. Your voice matters. Your vote matters. Your church is its own dialogue, whether you believe it or not. It's time now today to start talking about voting in 2020. Let's not wait until qualifications. Let's not wait until we start seeing the RSRs. Let's not wait until folks start coming on TV to make an announcement for them about privileges with new voting. We need to start today preparing ourselves, prepping ourselves for the 2020 election, because it will be a big one. This has been Sunday Conversation with Terry Reese. I hope you've enjoyed the election recap. We're going to be back with you next Sunday, and maybe we'll have a way to listen to all of this in Georgia and Florida, but we can come back and we can wrap that up for you again and talk about how we got to the point of where we will be at that time. Only the 50 votes at this point, whether it's about Forrest or Scraven, as well as Andrew Gibson, as well as Bill Nelson, as well as other people on the ballot here in Georgia, other Democrats that find themselves in the first place as well. This is Sunday Conversation with Terry Reese.
Do you have questions or concerns or want to be a guest on Sunday Conversation? Come and join me, Teddy Reese. Send me an email at sundayconversations@dbicolumbus.com. The views and expressions of Sunday Conversations are not the views of Davis Broadcasting Incorporated advertisers nor their staff.